Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, the last daf of what is known as Pesach Rishon, according to some, anyway, we'll talk about that tomorrow, is daf Nun Zayin, and we got up to Tana Rabbana. So the last thing that we were discussing was the question of taking Peah from Yerakot, and we spoke about Anshe Yericho, why it was that they held that certain types of vegetables are considered to be chayiv in Peah, because it is possible to store them long-term. When it approaches that we had with the machlokas was a question of the long-term storage of vegetable that requires something else. And we extended this lalacha, whether it would require irradiation or chilling or even freezing, such as we do today. We do have long-term storage of vegetables. So that was goof for the machlokas between Anshe Yericho about whether storage idei dover acher, and over here the case was that you would keep it together with the original body of the plant and then it wouldn't get ruined in the case of turnip. And the shaila was how this extends also maybe to leeks or cabbage. In any event, as the Chazon Ish points out, there's absolutely no excuse to paskening like this, because the correct girsa in the Braisa at the end of the daf was Barishona Hayu, which was part of Anshe Yericho. It is no longer Nogea Lamaisa, and therefore he argues on all those that would say that there is a ground here in the Gemara to tell me that there is a chiyuv on frozen vegetables to take off Peah. Okay, so it turned out that the Chachomim were Michu. Why? Because then the Aniyim that would be taking that Peah, they would think that it was Peah, real Peah, and that therefore it was actually Potter from Meiser, whereas since it wasn't real Peah, it wasn't Potter from Meiser, and there they would be eating Tevel in the end, because they wouldn't take off Trumas and Meisers from what was given to them as part of their Peah. And that brings us up to the third line today on the top of Nun Zayin, Tana Rabbanan. Mr. Ben Bohayan, what really means the son of Mr. Bohayan, so he used to give Peah to Yerek, and his father came and found what he had done. And he sees, you know, a bunch of people. They've got a lot of veggies from his garden, and they're about to leave the garden. So he stands over there at the gate, and he says, listen, guys, do me a favor. Put down everything that you gathered, and I'm going to give you double what you gathered. Okay? The difference is that what you gathered is tevel, and I'm going to be giving you kosher food. Okay? I'm not asking you to put it down, because I'm eni tzara, chas v'shalom. Lo mipnei she'eni tzara. It's not that I don't want you to have your food. And chas v'shalom, it's mipnei she'amru chachamim einotnim peah l'yerek. So it's just because you're not supposed to give this peah, and it's really chayef to take off trumas and maisras. Well, wasn't that obvious? I mean, he gives them double the amount of food. Why does he have to tell them it's not because I don't want to share my food? So omelei l'meim ralahu. Lo mipnei she'eni tzara. No, because if he didn't say that, they would have said, yeah, right. When we see it, we'll believe it. Right now, we're taking what we got. A bird in hand is worth two in a bush. So he wanted to make it clear to them. He's not telling them to put it down so they can make off with their food. And he's explaining them why. And that way, okay, all right, that makes sense. Fine. So very good. Now, the question, the obvious question is, what exactly, if the mocker of the ptur of Peah is because of the fact that since Be'etzem the Peah is Hefker, if it's Hefker, there's no chiv of Trumas Amaisris on Hefker, right? So over here, if the guy gave it as Peah, even if we don't paskin like him, and it's not chayev in Peah. Now, if you hold that this Peah, by the way, this is a machlokas, whether Peah on things that are not from Dagan, Tirosh, V'Yitzar, is a Diraisa or Derabbanan. But in any event, it would be the same thing, because even if it were Derabbanan, the chiyav of Trumas HaMaisa would also be Derabbanan, and therefore the Peah would have parted you from the chiyav Derabbanan. That's no problem. But the question is, if the Makar of the patur of taking off Trumas HaMaisos is because of the fact that you were mafkirit to the Aniyim when you made it Peah, and Hefker is Potter, so then if that's the case, who cares? Call it Peah, don't call it Peah, call it Hefker. The bottom line is the guy was giving it away to the Aniyim, and it's Hefker, right? So why shouldn't he be Potter? So Tosis brings numerous approaches. The most partial approach is that maybe we're going like the Shita, that only Hefker L'Aniyim is not called Hefker. because the makor of the dinim of Hefker is from Shemitah, and from Shemitah it's Hefker for everybody. It's basically all Shita. In which case, since over here he was only giving it away to Aniyim, it wouldn't have been considered to be Hefker, but then that would mean that the limud that we have, which is of the fact that the Levi, it says, ki ein lo chelek v'nachalayim imach, that the reason you should be giving him things is because he doesn't have any share in your nachala, which Rashi understands here to be a function of hefker, that since it's hefker, he does have a chelek v'nachala. Over here, if we're telling us that it's not considered to be hefker, then that would mean that there's a special din of peah, in which, since this is given for the Levi and the Oni to take, so yesh lo chelek v'nachala, but not be time hefker, but if be'etzem, it's not being given to him because of this time of peah, so then he wouldn't really be potter. That's one approach. The other approach is maybe it's hefker b'ta'ut. The guy thought that it was chayev and peah. Had he known he doesn't have to give peah, he wouldn't have been mafker it for the aniyim. Okay, in any event, the idea would be always that everybody is meida, that real peah is definitely potter, is not dependent. As Tosis points out, bringing the drosha in the sifri is not dependent in its being literally hefker. Tana Rabbanan. Now, we had other situations like this, where there was initially a way of giving things out, and they changed it. Rishona hayu menichin orot kodashim b'lishkat beit ha-parava. It used to be that every evening they would give out the day's work to people who had worked it. So the parts that go to the Kohanim, one of the things, of course, that goes besides the parts to eat of the carbon that go to the Kohanim, of the Chataot and the Ashamim, those things are given to the Kohanim, but so are all of the skins, except, of course, for Kachim Kalim, of the Shlomim and the Taidais, where people keep their own. But other than that, it's given to the Kohanim. Which Kohanim? So remember that every single day of the week, another Beit Av of the current Mishmar, the Mishmar was a major Chaluka, which worked 2 weeks out of the year, the 24 Mishmarot. And then each one of those Mishmarot would split the week into the various families, which was called a Beit Av. So each day had its special family day. So it would give out the Orot of that day to the family that had worked on that day among the Kohanim, and it, you know, whatever it is, some days there were more Orot, some days there were less. The way that it worked out, that's the way that it worked out. And then they would take this and they would put it in what was known as the Lishkot HaParva. It was called Parva because the name of the guy who made it was Parva, but the name, the word for hides is also parvot, or at least skins that have any kind of wool or, you know, hair on them of chayot. So the name of that is parvot. So basically it worked out very nicely that this became the meaning of the Lishkas Beis HaParva as well. So le'erev hayu mechalkim otam l'anshei beit av, and they would give them out for the people that worked that day. The problem was that there were some ba'alei zro'ot among the Kohanim who would be like bullies, and they would insist that they want a particular skin, and they want more, and they would force other Kohanim to allow them to take what they wanted as their share of the Orot. So then they decided, in order to avoid that kind of situation, that instead, what they would do is they would average out the Nesina by giving it out before, from one Erev Shabbos to the next. And that way, Erev Shabbos, all of the Mishmar would come together on Erev Shabbos. And if everybody was there, so then, I mean, you can't, bullies are not going to attack the entire, you know, the entire group. And this way, the pashtus is that this way they were simply mechalik it between all of the mishpachas. There are some of the shita that say that, no, they kept each day separate. They just didn't give it out. But Michalkin, the pashas of Michalkin, is that they actually ended up averaging it so that everybody got the same amount based on what the week had produced. But even so, what would happen then is that they didn't have bullies, but they had other kinds of bullies, you know, tech bullies like today, or money bullies, or people that were more respect it for whatever reason. The Gedolei Kuhuna, they got their ways, but nobody wanted to stand up against them. Speaking truth to power, you know, was a tough thing in those days too. So what they did was, Omdua Baalim Vigdishum Lashamayim. So basically the Kohanim got together and said, look, this can't go on. So instead of our taking them, what we're going to do is we're going to give all of the Orot to Hegdash. And it'll go to the Berak HaBayit, and that way nobody's going to be allowed to be Nena from them. And this short circuits all of the plans of these bullies and these influential people to take more than their share. This is how Rashi learns. Others understand, including the Marsha, that the meaning is that the Baalim, literally the owners of the Korban, originally would give the Orot to the Berak HaBayit, and the rest would go Lashamayim. Fine. In any event, Omru, so they said about that period, that it didn't take very long. They made these beautiful golden tiles to cover over the entire Heichal, and they were clip-on tiles. Each one was very beautifully done. It was artistic work, and they were clip-on so that they could, each one of them was one amma by one amma. It's about the size of a large floor tile that we use today. And it was as thick as a dinar zahav. So it's as thick as a coin. I mean, you can imagine each one of these was worth thousands and thousands of dollars, pure gold. And Lerekel, during Yontif, they would disconnect the tiles and they would put them around in the Harabayit, on the stairs of the Harabayit, because they wanted people to see how beautiful they were, and they were absolutely stunningly constructed, and therefore it was a covet for the Beis HaMikdash, kidei shiyu olei regalim ro'im shemalachtan na'ah ve'in badelim. They wanted the people that were coming up to the Beis HaMikdash to see the beautiful workmanship of these tiles, that there was not the slightest thing that you could look at as being out of place. The art was perfection. Tana, Abba Shaul Omer, Korot Shel Shikma Hayu B'Yericho. We had a situation like this. There were these sycamores. Remember, we talked about in Yericho that used to grow. And then Baalei Zro'ot Notim Otam B'Zro'ah. And the owners, here we're not talking about the ones that belong to Agdash, but the owners were under attack by mafia people who would take them, and they would take them at gunpoint. These are very valuable. So basically all of the owners got together and made it Hegdash. Alehem v'al koyotzei behem, on people that would use force in this fashion. They used to say, Omar Abba Shaul ben Bitnis b'shum Abba Yosef ben Chanin, oili mi beit baitos. It's just the misery that we suffer because of Baitos, who was one of the Kohanim Gedolim. Oili mi alatan. It's because of their sticks that they carry around, and they terrorize us with clubs. These are the bullies. Oili mi beit chanin. Oili mi lechishatan. These guys used to speak Lashon Hara and make sure that they blacklisted people that didn't like it, that stood up against them. Oili mi beit katros. We I'm sure Barnea will. Barnea's not here. Okay, so. But a lot of pieces from Beit Katros are left that are still marked Beit Katros that were recovered in Yerushalayim. So oily me Beit Katros, because of the way that they would publish. They had this newspaper that they would publish, letters that they would send around full of conspiracy theories and all kinds of things that would cause a tremendous amount of tzara, of saying that this guy's no good and that guy's no good. These are the people that ruin society and should be remembered for generations as ruination. Oile mi beit Yishmo ben Piachi. And these Yishmo ben Piachi, we'll see later on, it wasn't him, but it was his family. That oile mi egrofam, they also bully people. Sheim kohanim kedolim, all of these, Baitos, Chanin, Katros, Yishmo ben Piachi, they're Kohanim Gedolim, and they use the influence of the Kuna Gedolah, and their children ended up being the Gizbarim. And their son-in-laws, they appointed as the Amar Kalim. Amar Kalim comes from the word Amar Kal, the guy who could say everything, meaning he's in charge of what was going on in the base of Megiddash. And that's a disaster. And the Avadim that they had, who were obviously not like all Avadim, like we find in the base of the Resh Galuta, so they didn't control their Avadim. And their Avadim were Chovtim et ha'am b'maklot, and they would force their way on people. Tana Rabbanan. Arbat Zvachot Zavcha Azara. The Azara is as if it actually cried out to the Shamayim at the meaning, some say it means literally there was a bas kol. The Pashtus is, well, I see. We want to give an example of Zvachot, but I think probably was a more mature voice than that. But anyway, the sounds of the Azara who was calling out were about this kind of situation. And the first was, the terrible voice, was Tzu Mikan B'nai Eli, Shetim Uechal Hashem. And this, of course, based on the Pasuk of the story of B'nai Eli, where the Pasuk represents it as if they actually would sleep with the women that would brought Korbanos. The Gemara says, Chas V'Shalom. That isn't what it means, but they were not careful at getting those Korbanos of the Yoledes or the Zova brought on time, which would mean that they would stick around, and because of that wouldn't get home in time to sleep with their husbands. And because of that, it's an amazing Gemara, because of that, the Pusik views it as being a Freudian sexual thrill that they had controlling these women, and therefore it's as if they were actually sleeping with this woman. It's extremely sophisticated understanding of the type of things that go on inside people's minds. So because of that, the Azara would cry out, get these people out of here, because they made the entire Azara tummy. And another tzvacha was, Tse mikan Yisachar ish kvar bar kai. This guy Yisachar was a Kohen Gadol, was mechabedet atzmo, u'mechalel katshe shamayim. What did he do? He was korich yodei b'shiroi v'ovid avoda. He was too high and mighty, you understand, to have his bare hands touch animals, you know. So he would wrap them, you know, in white gloves or in beautiful cloths, which, of course, first of all, passed the avoda because it's a chatzitza, and it was an incredible insult to katshe shamayim. And therefore, we view it as if the Azara was shouting, get this guy the hell out of here. And this, by the way, this leads to an actual question, halacha l'maisa, which Reb Meisha was called upon to paskin this halacha. This is what they started doing in the big kosher shchitas, is they started using these disposable gloves for the sheikhtim, who would then be able, instead of getting themselves completely filthy, so they would just take off a disposable glove, put on a new glove, which makes a heck of a lot of sense. But so the question is whether this was considered to be, since it was considered to be such a terrible thing for Yisachar Ishkvar Barkai, so Enochinami, there's no din of a chatzitza legabe shritas chulin, obviously, so it wouldn't be a problem. But he entertained, people were tining that maybe there was a question of being mezalzel in the mitzvah and not wanting to get your hands dirty in the mitzvah. Anyway, Ramesha Paskin, that it was only Benogia Kachim. But it's interesting that even a Gemara like this should have its modern questions associated with it. The Otsvavcha Azara, another thing that the Azara cried out, and this is for good things, which was, Yikanes Yishmoel ben Piachi Talmidei Shel Pinchas. Now, this is interesting because we just listed this same Kohen Gadol as being a guy, oh, God, save us from these people, right? Because his family was vicious. So that's exactly the point. His family was vicious, but he was a big tzaddik, and they wanted him to actually be there for the Kohen Gadol. So in order to be mechalik between him and his family, so we represent it as a tzvacha. That's almost understandable, because otherwise, I mean, there were certainly many other Kohanim Gedolim that were choshev that we could have said, tzvacha zor yikanes, right? But over here, there were a lot of people who were against him because of the family. So because of that, we say, no, the Azora insisted, ki'ilu, that we have these people. And then there was one other case, which is the Tzavcha Azara, to say, Su'u Sharim Roshechem, lift up the gates of the Azara, and let Yochanan ben Narbai Talmida Shel Pinkai. So this is a person who apparently doesn't say he should come into the Kohen Gadol. The Pashtus is that It wasn't in the Kohuna Gedolah. So some say, the Maharal wants to say that the reason that we call him Talmido Shel Pinkai, the Maharal understands it is a Kohen Gadol, but it's Yochanan Kohen Gadol. And that's the one who became the Tzeduki after all of those years in the Kohuna Gedolah, right? So we didn't want to call him a Talmid of Pinchas HaKohen, so we called him instead Pinky, instead of Pinchas, so that people wouldn't confuse him, his memory, with being a tzaddik. But the pashtus is that what we're talking about over here is someone who isn't really a Kohen Gadol, and we're talking about another guy who had a Moshe Forman kind of appetite. And so because of that, they wanted him in the Azara, because, you know, people with big appetites are useful in the Azara, because that way there won't be any noser hanging around if you've got somebody who can eat up, you know, like 400 steaks at a sitting and so on. There's a tremendous madriga for working in the Beis HaMikdash. So they wanted him around. The problem is they found out he was only a Levi. So they had this guy substituting, and his name was Yochanan ben Arbai. Now, he was a Kohen. And they say, let him come in, say the gates of the Azorah, and let him fill up his tummy with Kodshe Shamayim. Because what they say about Yochanan ben Arbai is he used to be able to eat 300 calves, and he would drink 300 barrels of wine. Now, you remember the Gemara Chulin that says 300 is always a Lashon of Guzma, but it means, oh my gosh, it was quite a bit. And this is challenging even for our own champion over here, the Daf Yomi. And he would eat arba'im sa'a gozlot bekinuach. So just for dessert, he would eat 40 saw of the birds that were brought as korbanos. And what they say about him is, as long as this guy was alive, koyomav sheyochanan arba, you couldn't find a single piece of noser in the Azara, because there was always an emergency noser. And if they looked like there was going to be stuff that was left over, they had a button in the Azara that was connected to this guy's house. They pushed the button, and that would be the end of all of the Nozer. So it was no problem during his lifetime. Rashi says that it doesn't mean that he personally ate all this, but that what he used to do is he would be erech these gigantic seudas for Kohanim, so that they should all be able to join up together and to be able to eat the Nozer. There shouldn't be any Nozer. Anyway, so getting back to the story of Yisachar, Ishbar Kai, that he would wrap his hands either in gloves or beautiful material, which was a tremendous insult to the Kodesh Shamayim. So the Gemara wants to know, like, what happened to a guy that treated Kodeshim like that and was Mechal Hashem Shamayim? My Salka baby is Sachar Ishkvar Barkai. Whatever ended up with him? Omer, well, they say that the Malka and the Malkata have Yatve, that once there was the Melech and the Malka. Rashi says, talking about Bibes Chashmonai, but Lamais increases, it says Beferish, that this was Yanai. So we know exactly who it was, and he was a tough character. So he and his queen were sitting around and having a meal. So they got into an argument about which type of meat is better. So the king said, Gadya Yoy. So that it's tastier, it's better food than lamb is goat kid. And the queen said, no, actually, lamb is better. Okay, so all kinds of cute explanations of the Ben Ish Chai, that this is a question of whether Chanukah is more chashuv than Pesach, or whether Pesach is more chashuv than Chanukah. And the question over here is a cute remez to Gedi, in terms of the mazel of the months that we're talking about. But that's the Ben Ish Chai in any event. I mean, he'll find these beautiful ramazim. So, and she tied that actually lamb is better. So, so they said, okay. So, I mean, how are you going to find somebody? I mean, you know what they say nowadays. Ala tam ve ala reach ein lit vakeach. So, like, you know, is there any way to get an objective opinion as to what is better meat? So they said, you know what? There's only one person we could ask, the Kohen Gadol. I mean, after all, the Kohen Gadol is the guy that's supposed to be the most sensitive to meat, and he would be the one who understands, like, the real input of meat. And so the question is, you know, let's call him. So anyway, they call him in. So Atayu, he was the Kohen Gadol in that day, and this was Yisachar Ishbar Kai, and they tell him, What do you say? Eh, so he's like a smart aleck, you know. One of these would be like, you ask, you know, one of these mockers today, you know, like, what's, eh? He says, he waves his hand. Well, you know, if Gedi was better, how come the carbon talmid isn't brought from the Gedi? Now, this did not exactly please the king. It's bad enough, thinks the king, that he doesn't agree with me, which is in itself outrageous. But he thinks that this is funny and that he could just wave his hand. Ah, come on, if Gedi was better. That is not the way you speak in front of the king. And therefore, Omar Malka, well, since this guy obviously is lacking in covet for the Malchus, he has no ema for the Malchus, let us cut off his right hand. Now, Yisachar at least wanted to be able to retain his right hand, so he went and he paid the executioner $100,000 to cut off his left hand and to claim that he cut off the right hand. So, okay, so he gives him a bribe. But then the king found out about it. So he said, okay, now cut off his right hand. So he ended up losing both hands. So Omer of Yosef, when he heard the story, he said, "Brich rachmona de ashkele li yisachar ish kvar bar kai lemitraf se minei b'hai alma." So Baruch Hashem, that he took the what he owed, that was what he deserved in this world, and he didn't suffer in Olam Haba. And this way, because of this, it was Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, and it showed the Chumras Hadin over this type of Yachas, the Kodesh Shamayim. And because of that, he was Mischaper, besides, obviously, the Tsar of losing his hands. But the way in which he was Mitakein through that loss was that Kishak Kodesh Baruch Hu Ayis Hadin, so Shmo is Mis'ale, as Rashi says, not here. Omer Rashi, you know, this guy, it's very clear from this story that the guy was mamish and amoretz. I mean, Yisachar ish kvar bar kai lo tana masnisin. I mean, he never learned brises, you know, because if he did, I mean, he would have known. I mean, this is a Mishnah even. It's not. It's a brisa. If it's a Mishnah, actually, in Krisis that says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, kvasim kodmim le'izim b'chol makom. Every single time the Torah mentions a keves and a gedi, so it always first talks about imin akvasim. First. And why do you think that is? So do you think that it's because it's more choshev? So why does it say kisba o siratizim? Why not say siratizim o kisba, for instance, right? So Yocho, you might think that that's because indeed it's choshev, more choshev, which is essentially what this Kohen Gadol thought. But here's a Mefarish Mishnah that says not like that. Talmud Lomar, that's why it says, Im Kesev, Im Eiz, Im Kesev Yavi Korbanola Chatat, and then it says, Im Eiz, to basically make them exactly the same. Melamed Shishneihem Shkulim. So obviously, if we need to put them exactly side by side, it means that in terms of the Chashivas of the gift, which is always dependent in Mufchar, what is Mufchar? So the Torah is telling you, neither is Mufchar from the other. And the choice over here for Tamid is not based on Mufchar. There's another reason for mentioning it first, but we have no Hakpada as Mufchar. So there may be things that are associated with the way that the species relates to Adam and so on, which we can understand. Obviously, there are differences between, I mean, the, you know, Mary had a little lamb, not a little goat. So the idea over there would be that it's dependent on some other element, but not on the meat. So therefore, he obviously hadn't learned that Mishnah. Ravina says, what do you mean he didn't learn Mishnah? The guy never even understood a pasuk, because afilu mikra, even the pasuk he didn't know, because that's why it says, im keves v'im eiz. Iboy keves laise, iboy eiz laise, and so it was even psukim beferish that he wasn't a bucky in. So he's really deserved it, man. Hadron Allah is our dear Richie, ready? Hadron Allah Perek Mokam Shanago and Slikalu Pesach Rishon. This is the end of the Mesechet called Pesach Rishon. You will recall that I mentioned to you at the beginning in our introduction to the Mesechet that the Mesechet is really split into two very different parts. There's a Kachim part, which we're about to embark on, and there's the Chulin part. And the kutchim, we've seen this all along, the dinim of achila and the wild interrelationship of essentially chulin issues, which is the achila of matzah and the achila of morar, mitzvahs that are nagos, afil bizman hazem, we don't have kutchim. They're intimately intertwined with the dinim of kutchim. And there would be no way to actually tease apart this besechet in such a way that we should make it part of it, not nogea the dinim of Pesach per se, and leave it in Seder kutchim. And this is good for part of the issue. This leads, by the way, to a very serious question. Is it true that this is the end of a Masechet called Pesach Rishon? The obvious problem is that the Masechet continues with the last perek, which is Arvei Pesachim. And that talks about the Leil HaSeder. And the Leil HaSeder is something that is very nogea today, and should be combined with what we're calling your Pesach Rishon. Now, there are indeed many versions of the Seder of the Mishnah that has the fifth perek of Pesachim, then that is the perek of Arvei Pesachim, and not this perek. So that then you would have said Slikalot Pesach Rishon, but then the way that we have it actually shows a completely different point, that the Seder of the Masechet is a Seder that has to do with the work that is done for Pesach. So first we start with Arvei Pesachim, right? And Arvei Pesachim, the idea over there is literally the day before, where we have to do the night. And what do we do at night? So we do the Bedikas Chametz. And then what do we do in the daytime? It talks about what hour it becomes Aser. How do we do the Bedikas Chametz, the Bir Chametz? After we finish that, are we allowed to do Malacha? Are we not allowed to do Malacha? What's the din of Malacha? Achar Chatzos. And then we bring the story of the Anshei Yericho. Okay, and then what happens after, when it's time for the Tamid? Now we're talking about the next thing we have to do, which is to bring our Korban Pesach. After we have our Korban Pesach, so then we, in fact, are able to talk about what we do at the Leil HaSeder. And then we close the Masechet with the Leil HaSeder. So it's not so pashut, because then this idea of saying there's two different Pesachim, one of them is Nogea Kutchim, one of them is Nogea Chulin, it's not really true. Not to mention the fact that obviously during the Seder, you need to have your carbon available. Otherwise, what are we talking about? All the dinim of what it is that we do at a Seder Shel Pesach? I mean, just because we happen to temporarily have run out of a carbon Pesach doesn't mean that we're supposed to present the Seder on the night of Pesach and not talk about how we're supposed to run the Seder with the carbon. So Lemaisa, I mean, this is very much a far more recent development in pretending that it's really two separate Masechtas. I personally don't feel all that good about saying Slikalot Pesach Rishon, but anyway, it allows our dear Kapitan to get in a extra hadran alach makam shenagu. Very good. Okay, that I think we'll do tomorrow. And what we've got over here, if you have time, there's the Kitzur Hilchos HaRosh, which they took the Seder, Hilchos Korban Pesach, which was split into two parts, Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, based really on the Prokim that are coming up. And there's going to be a separate one. There's Kitzur Hilchos Pesach Sheni that we have later on, which is also from the Rosh. And they included that in the introduction over here in the actual Masechet, as opposed to at the end of the Masechet. So if you want a quick review, you can either look at this to get your halachas ready in advance. You can go to the Rambam's halachas, leave out, meanwhile, the dinim of Pesach Sheni, because that we have as a separate section, and we can look at that. And as I said, there are many who have the Seder in the Masechet of, like the Yerushalmi, Arvei Pesachim, which is talking about the night of the Seder, that Arvei Pesachim continues here, and then we move on to the Kutchim. Okay, we'll do it, of course, according to the Seder of the Daf Yomi, but just keep it in mind.